This is the School Success Podcast, a podcast for school leaders to learn from other school leaders what's working and what's not, and to get inspiration and encouragement, as well as strategies to grow school enrollment, connect with families, retain teachers, recruit teachers, and everything in between. You guys are heroes, and I cannot thank you enough for pouring into this next generation that's coming behind us. My goal is you will take at least one thing away from every episode that you can take back to your school to make it better than it is right now. Please enjoy the School Success Podcast. Hey, School Success Makers, welcome to another edition of the School Success Podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Slater. I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Dan Snyder, out of the great city of Wichita, Kansas. And he is the headmaster of Concordia Academy in, of course, Wichita. So go check them out. They're pretty awesome. And what we're going to do today is dive into their school, what all is happening there in Kansas. But before we do that, I do want to highlight one of our sponsors. They're amazing, and they are America's Christian Credit Union. And this year, they're celebrating 65 years of service, and they provide essential school banking services and tuition financing program for schools who are looking to reduce their risk and administrative burden. And you can learn more about that on their website at americaschristiancu.com/schools. That's americaschristiancu.com/schools. One of my favorite pieces about what they offer is the tuition financing part, where if you're a school chasing people all year round to get the tuition that people are supposed to be paying you, they can get a tuition financing loan through the credit union, and then you get all your money up front as a school. They pay the loan off over the next year, and you don't have to chase people. It doesn't cost your school anything. So if that's something that interests your school, please go see them online at americaschristiancu.com/schools. All right, y'all. So Dan the Man Snyder here is, I'm going to pass it off to him to introduce himself because he's a pretty awesome guy. So Dan, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Thank you, Mitch. Good to be here. Or wherever we are.
Well, I always, here's a great way to start this podcast, because I always talk about Kansas. So not always talk about Kansas, but you know, we're not in Kansas anymore, as I'm sure you hear all the time from good old Wizard of Oz. But I like to always start with, if I was to visit, which I've never visited Kansas, full disclosure, but if I was to visit Wichita, what would you be like, Mitchell, you have to do this to have the full Wichita or Kansas experience?
Oh, well, first of all, you have to do this. Wichita has an excellent zoo, but to have sort of a full Wichita experience, Wichita has a lot of excellent restaurants. So it's a little bit of a foodie city. And there are a couple places in particular, but I don't want to give out endorsements, unpaid or unsolicited endorsements here. But okay. Ziggy's Pizza is pretty good, and Dempsey's Burger Pub is pretty good. And we have a lot of sort of high-end restaurants, too, that are very nice. And, well, I got to know my first sommelier personally. I lived all this time in New York City, and I moved to Wichita, and I met a sommelier. A wine taster, you know, a wine purchaser. So,
okay, so I didn't actually know what that was. All right.
Yes, sir. I thought that's interesting. And we have a good symphony here. We have an opera company and a lot of great schools. And we're trying to join them in that legion of greatness.
Man. Okay. Now, very good. Now, so for Kansas, and this is obviously naive of me, what is the, like, every state, and I don't even know, obviously, every state's part of this, but like, what is the driving economy for you, for like, Kansas, or just even like the area of Wichita? I mean, tourism, is there?
So Wichita is sometimes referred to as the air capital of the world. So there's quite a bit of aerospace, engineering, production, design that goes on here. Wichita has a lot of engineers. And over at WSU, Airbus is actually on the campus right there. And there's a lot of work with Boeing that goes on. So if you're paying attention to whatever's going on in the air industry around the world, that reflects directly on how the economy's moving in Wichita. Along with that, we have a whole lot of agribusiness. So there's, and that's perpetual. Wichita kind of started off as a farming empire, and that has continued. So the crops in Wichita, they tend less towards corn, more toward wheat, but we have a lot of cattle and all of that kind of stuff going on too.
Okay. Farming. I mean, I don't know why I didn't even think about that. So as we jump in for today's episode, I always like to start with getting the guest background. So if you could give us the 1,000-foot view, like how you got to where you are today, like what's kind of the background you have in not even just education, but just kind of how you, your your life till now, Dan?
Yes. Well, I had no idea that I would end up being a head of school or that I would actually be in the education business. That all came about providentially. I guess, you know, this is that like that kind of a joke. It all started in an 800 watt AM station, but many years ago, I was a radio disc jockey. So I worked in the AM market, FM market, ran a Sonic drive-in after getting out of school, just kind of hanging around raising kids. And for some crazy reason, decided to join the Marine Corps. So there I was in the Marine Corps. I worked as an air traffic controller and later on as a computer programmer. And from there, however, I couldn't really escape it. My family, we had always been musicians. And so I ended up in the music business, something I swore I would never do. I became a singer through some additional training, a classical singer. One thing led to another. I was an opera singer. And meanwhile, my work in the Marine Corps had kind of turned me into a video game designer. I think if you look, I think it's the 1997 April edition of Wired magazine. You'll see my work on the cover. That's one of the few, one of the remaining things of my time of brief fame in that business. So I was a video game designer working out of New York, and I would tour. I went to Germany and got to work in Africa and all kinds of places like that. And as time passed, as all things do, the seasons change, and there's an appropriate time to get out of a business. And I was just trying to think what I would do next. And my father, a history professor, he's passed away now, but at the time, he suggested I get into the education business. And because my brother-in-law was a headmaster at the time in Wichita of a classical school, something I knew nothing about, he suggested I look there. And one of the reasons is I'd become proficient in several languages in my course as an opera singer. I had contact with Logic as a computer programmer. I had worked at the training and education headquarters of the U.S. Marine Corps, so I had been trained in sort of platform training delivery and things like that. So in God's view of what I was supposed to be doing, I could see how many of these things contributed to what's happening today in my life. So yes, we moved to Wichita in about 2013, and I was a high school teacher teaching ancient literature, logic, and rhetoric. And over the course of my teaching career, I've had the opportunity to teach German, to teach Latin, a little bit of Italian and French. And then one thing led to another. And being a Lutheran, I was here involved with the Kansas District. A board existed from about 6 years ago to investigate the possibility of starting a Lutheran high school in Wichita to complement the Lutheran K through 8 schools that already exist all around here. And I think it was something I was trying to avoid. I didn't want to be an administrator or a headmaster. I wanted to keep riding my little bicycle to school and teaching about Cicero and Plato and those kinds of things. And it was very nice. I enjoyed it very much. But in the course of things, it became more and more apparent that it was down to me to do this job. And so last year, we had our first year of classes and established the school. And here we are in our second year. And Mitch, your company's helping us out with this. I'm really glad to be aboard with you all. And yeah, we have a lot to look forward to. We have a little bump in enrollment and a couple new instructors, some more capabilities, lots of things, lots of wonderful things to look back on and look forward to.
I love it. What a great background. I know that you've mentioned the opera thing before, so we're going to have to maybe for another episode, sing a couple bars for us or something, you know. I think you have a great voice for radio. I can tell when you're talking about being in radio, but then the opera thing. I actually do enjoy opera. I don't know how you, I guess real quick, how do you learn opera? Is it like specific training on how to sing in that way?
Yeah, it's so strange. When I was a kid, my folks traveled all around the country in a VW bus, and we sang at churches all around the country, kind of like a little evangelical Partridge Family. You know, we wore matching suits. I played an electric guitar and that kind of stuff. And my dad, he was a classically trained singer. My mom, a pianist, a classical pianist. So as I said, I couldn't really escape it. So, and my dad, he was a tenor. So tenors are weird. I don't know if it's a learned behavior or natural. It's just kind of odd. But I grew up listening to him sitting in the church pew. And my family would always sing parts all the time. So my earliest memories were that. And I just kind of got sucked into it. So I was apprenticed that way. And I didn't do formal voice training or go to conservatory until much later, when I was already working in the music business. But I had several great teachers and coaches. You don't just go from singing Pass It On or things like that to suddenly starring in Wagnerian operas without some professional guidance, training, a lot of work. The voice, it's like an athletic endeavor. You have to sort of train your voice to be able to carry without any kind of amplification over a 100-piece orchestra. So it's an odd kind of sport in that way. But in learning the literature, though, the thing that stuck with me that I have now that I'm so thankful for is the opportunity to study world history and literature via that medium, which kind of makes you more and more curious to, why is this happening in this opera? Why are they talking about this? Oh, there's a historical reason. Oh, and it has to do with a peculiarity of Italian literature or something like that. And when those things become available to you, your world gets bigger. So I think analogously, that's kind of what classical education is about. It's enlarging the world. It's making more of the cultural, intellectual, and virtuosic heritage that kids have a right to, that's been given to them. It makes more of it available to them. So just how much of this can you stand, right? When you're talking to a student, because we've got a fire hose here, we can help you out. But getting to be an opera singer, my first audition, I'd been out cutting the grass, and there was a call at Washington Opera for auditions, and I'd heard about it through my voice teacher, and I was debating whether or not to go, and at the last minute I went, I showed up, I'm wearing cutoffs and grass-stained sneakers, and I'm at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., surrounded by a bunch of guys in suits. And I walked in to sing, and I don't know if you know who this is, but the guy who's sitting at the table at the other end of the audition hall is Placido Domingo. So my first audition was for Placido Domingo, at the time the most famous member of the three tenors. And that was, got about halfway into my piece, and suddenly the butterflies hit, right? Because I realized, good night, this guy, he's like a star in the opera world, and I'm trying to sing for a company. He's the artistic director at the time. But it went well. I just didn't know any better. You know, I was foolish enough to walk in there and think that I could sing in front of that guy. And yeah, they hired me with several contracts, and on it went. So I suppose it is true that if you train up a child in the way he should go, when he is old, he will not depart from it. So all of these things my parents were just doing around me, that's an education in itself. Parents should be aware that the kids are learning to be like you. That's good things and bad things. And I would observe that parents who read a lot of books, they tend to have students who like to read a lot of books. Or parents who make a lot of music, they like that the things that you're interested in, your child will be interested in.
Like father, like son type that saying,
yes.
Of course.
Yes. That's right. Was it Napoleon who said that the entire person is there in the cradle? That seed has every potential in it. And much of the formation is happening in a very young place in a person's life.
Yeah. I mean, they say the biggest development time of a child's life is 0 to 6. You know, like all so much is just put into that 0 to 6. And it's actually after those later years, it's less. I mean, obviously they're learning crazy stuff in high school, but and all that time, it's not like they're learning math and reading. I mean, maybe they're like a little bit of that. It's all like, how do you act when things happen? What happens when bad things happen to you? Like very life skill type things are developed in those early years. And you're watching how, like, we're really intentional about that with our 3-year-old, of like, how do we respond to anger? How do we respond to when things happen to us, to see like, oh, they get really upset when that happens. I guess I should get upset when that happens. Like, they're all watching, and it's like, and you can, they're sponges. I mean, everybody knows this. They're watching like little hawks, you know, and like, how does daddy do that? So you're very right. So now you hinted at it just a little bit ago, but like, you're talking about what classical Christian education is. So I would, let's play like a tiny little game real quick. I'm an interested family that's wanting to go to your school at Concordia. So I'm a parent, and I'm like, hey, Dan, I heard about your school, found it on Google or whatever. But I saw you guys are classical. I just wanted to go to a Christian school. So why should I? What is this whole classical thing? Why should I go to it? What's your answer?
Well, it's difficult for a person who's been in classical education to think of any other way that you could comport a Christian school. And that's because in one aspect of classicism is the recognition that the world has changed because of Christianity. And a lot of that is because of the written word, the Bible, of course, and also the world we live in, the Reformation, the Counter-Reformation. Those all happen because of people studying ancient languages and learning logic and rhetoric, which are sort of the liberal arts of basic classicism. So it is a course to a classicist, right? If you ask a plumber, that's the most important job in the world. If you ask a painter, that's the most important job in the world. Here, I'm a classical teacher and a headmaster, and I think it's the most important job in the world. Take that for what it's worth. But I think that it's also the most important way to rear a child, at least in the modern West, in scriptural literacy, literacy per se, the virtues of living out your calling in the world. I think it's more and more, I'm convinced that it also represents a recovery of culture. So a child is also being educated to live in a world that the school represents in a microcosm, saying this is the way people should get along. This is what they should care about. Here are the important things. So whatever your school is presenting in all of the time that they have the attention of your student, your child, those are the important things. You're saying it just by your devotion of time. So classical emphasis, again, it's going to be on history, literature, logic, the maths, and not so much focus on technology. In the classical world, we believe that a child is being trained up to be a better human being. Now, whatever that means for their future, it also means they're more trainable, they're more adaptable. So we don't worry so much about technological training in grammar or high school. Those are specialties that there's plenty of in the world that they can pursue in university. We're just concerned that they're going to end up being a good 80-year-old. We're not thinking about what school they're going to get into. It's sort of think about all of life. And what are the defining traits that have been passed down for humanity? What is God's apparent will for that? That sounds all grandiose. What would be a short one? Well, mom and dad, and I'd have to ask a lot of questions, but it would be, are you concerned that your child reads well? Are you concerned about what they read? What are some of the great books you've heard about that maybe you've read, or maybe there's some you wish you had read? And this is the time when your child has free time. Many people never come back around to reading the great books of Western civilization because they're busy. But when your child is of a high school age, school is their privilege to dwell on those things. That's their time. So you're proposing, let's get right to the top things, the best things in life right now before we get busy with all the little foxes that creep in later in life, as we know. And you have to bear up. You have to do your responsibilities and make money and those kinds of things. Right now, it's the privilege of your child to engage in this leisure activity. So,
all right. Now, I have one return question. If I was like, okay, to dive into this more, what would you suggest I read as a parent or the student dive into classical? If I wasn't to go to a classical school, what would you say that to maybe dive into a piece of that? What should they start with?
Well, right now we're reading C.S. Lewis's Abolition of Man, which, that's a good place to start. It's a fairly short work, and it gets to the root of the problem. C.S. Lewis has a gift for stating very complex things very simply. That's a great place. Where else? Oh my goodness, there's so many good books. But Repairing the Ruins, let's see, Wisdom and Eloquence by Little John, that's another good book. There are a variety of them out there. You might go to a website, like say the ACCS, who offers a lot of these books. Today, if you're looking for an argument about classical education as to why it's critical that classical education is revived in some form among us, you should read The Battle for the American Mind, which Pete Hegseth came out with from Fox. I resisted reading that book for a long time because I'm kind of an egghead and, you know, it's going to distract me from reading my ancient Greek and all of that. But finally somebody said, no, you should read this. It's really good. And I got a hold of it. And yeah, there is a lot of historical work in there that is presented very immediately, plainly, entertainingly. So this one is a good one too. Let me boil it down to two books. Abolition of Man and Battle for the American Mind. Those two right there.
Perfect. Okay. Well, then I think that's a perfect segue into my first questions, because we're talking about your school. We're talking about classical, and obviously your headmaster of the school in Wichita, Concordia. What are some challenges you guys are up against right now, and how are you combating those? You finished your first year, going into year number two. Obviously, yeah, you're going to have some different challenges in a school that's been around for 50 years or one that's just starting out. Love to hear some of the ones you guys currently have going on and how you're combating those challenges.
Yeah. Well, starting probably from the more mundane, the life of the student needs to be well-rounded. And so athletics needs to be a part of student life. There has to be that kind of education going on too. So last year we were able to get an association, sort of an associate membership in KASHA, the Kansas High School Athletic Association, Activities Association. And we were able to attend a couple of track meets, but we need to be able to do more. And I have more athletically oriented students coming in this year. How we're addressing that is that we're talking to other area schools, small schools, and finding opportunities to host our own athletic events too, which aren't part of that conference. So there are a lot of smaller independent schools that say we could have we could host a cross country meet. We could do that. I've been talking to the people who are doing the rowing association down on the Arkansas River downtown, talking about getting our kids involved in rowing and crew. So we're looking for those kinds of things. I am not of the opinion that athletics needs to grow to such a size that it impinges on scholastics, but I'm not one of those guys that said, no, athletics is fine. No, I don't believe that. This is a challenging area for us. You know, we might be big enough to have a basketball team, but we would have a hard time fielding a football team or anything like that. Sure. So that is a challenge.
Now, with the sports side, I would obviously, you know, think about the ancient Greeks. You know, we had the Olympics, so I feel like you guys, yeah, you'd have to. Like, it's very classical of you guys to have some type of sports team.
Yes, I agree. You're right. Well, you know, in Plato's school, the academy, the students would sit around and they would go through all their discourses and do all their schoolwork. And about every hour and a half or so, they would wrestle. They'd have a wrestling match. And then, then they'd sit and cool off and study some more. So it was all kind of intermingled. So wrestling was really a big deal with the Greeks. That was one of the major Olympic sports. I don't see that happening in our classroom.
I feel like that'd help you focus better, getting some energy out, getting some your blood pumping and then back to focusing. I feel like it's very natural. I know. Yeah, wrestling in the classroom. I feel like there'd be a hard time explaining that to a mom and dad.
Yeah. Clear out the desks.
Uh-huh. Come home with a black eye. It's like Mr. Snyder said that we had to wrestle in school.
That's right. That's
we would have flunked. What so any other challenges that kind of come to mind besides the sports thing? That's a fair, super fair one, because you have some schools that are starting out, they have hundreds of students, and obviously you guys are, you know, you're starting out with just high school, so it's a different challenge, of course, with the sports thing. Yeah. Anything else that comes to mind?
Yes, transportation. So we're at the phase where we could grow quite a bit if we could drive people around. So if we could get people from A to B, then we would be in a better spot. That challenge is, it has to do with, there's this little spot where you've got about 14, 15 students, and now to transport them, you need a CDL, you need a commercial driver's endorsement on your license. And if you do that, you need several people who do that, because you can't just have it where so-and-so couldn't show up, and nobody can go anywhere, nobody can get to school, nobody can do anything. And then it's complicated by state laws. In Kansas, it's kind of weird. We're one of maybe two states in the union that specifies that if you have 10 kids or more, you have to actually, CDL aside, you have to drive them in a Department of Transportation certified school bus. So it can't be Mr. Smith's van or something like that. It has to be a school bus. It's yellow with the black stripe, and it's got the little flappy stop sign and all that stuff. So how about that? This is a challenge. You know, and I'll comment that other states that do this. So the bigger challenge is that if you're in an endeavor like this, you need to acquaint yourself with all the laws of the state and all these kinds of things as well. But in other states that do this, it's really interesting. I wish we had a law like this. The state school bus system has to transport kids not only to the public schools, but to the private schools because the taxpayers are paying for it.
Ooh.
So now I'm thinking, if I go to my friends who are in the legislature and work on these problems, I would say, hey, here's the deal. Sure, make all the rules you want, but provide solutions if you have these rules. Right? It's not fair to put an imposition on families. That's just a lot of thou shalt nots and a lot of barriers. Kansas is a more open educational enterprise and experimentation. In this case, they have kind of a roadblock. That's been frustrating. We could have had a van this year were it not for that.
So you're saying other states, but not Kansas, have laws where the public school system, you can use those buses?
That's right. So I had the occasion to really study all this stuff, and I found out that not only is Kansas unique, it's a little more restricted than you would expect. I mean, Kansas does not have helmet laws for motorcycles. We have open constitutional carry. It's not unusual to see people walking downtown with a pistol strapped on. We have anybody can start a school. Lots of things. Unfortunately, recently, we're a very permissive state when it comes to abortion. So whereas Kansas is sort of, you might call them kind of libertarian in politics, not very socially conservative, but when it comes to restrictive regulations, we don't have that many of them. So it was a surprise to find this one in transportation law, Department, Kansas Department of Transportation. Real surprise.
My goodness. And I see exactly what you're saying. Like the taxpayers are paying for it. So I 100% see what you're saying. Now, I think you also had a challenge too. You have, between the students you guys have, aren't they also very spread out too? Like to pick them all up, wouldn't that be a huge challenge in and of itself too?
Yes. So Kansas, when I moved here from New York City, if you go into a restaurant, you're always rubbing up against other people. Like the tables are, you know, because there's real estate's expensive and everything's really tight. So everybody's all bunched in all the time, and not to mention the subway. But you come out to the Midwest, and it's hilarious. You stay in a hotel if you're visiting a Midwestern town or a Western town, it's even more so, and you're in your Super 8 or whatever, and you get up in the morning and you want to go to the coffee machine. You almost get out of breath walking across the room to get over there because it's like, we have this much space. All the rooms are huge. All the tables are far apart. Well, guess what? All the people live far apart too, except for here in the old city where we're located. But Wichita, about 500,000, maybe to 700,000 in the greater Wichita area. But it occupies so much land, Wichita does. And immediately outside, you get into the country and you get into – so consider Wichita is the largest city in Kansas at that. But it's, I don't even know if it's in the top 50 of most populated cities in the United States. And then Kansas is a very sparsely or spread out population-wise state, which consequently has led in the Lutheran world of education to the existence of lots of little rural Lutheran schools for kindergarten through eight. And some of those are 120 years old. So that's been going on for a long time. Anyway, yes. There are students out there who say, we would love to go to Concordia High School if you'd just come pick us up. Because it's
and tough. 40 minutes away or an hour away.
Yeah, well, and that leads us to this one. So you ask also part of your question, how are you dealing with this? We have a thing called Orbis Concordiae, or Orbis Concordiae, which is sort of the greater realm of Concord. And the idea with this program is that students, for a reduced tuition, can come and board with families in town. We're looking into other solutions there too, for a week at a time, where they attend classes here with us live. Then they go back to their home parish, their hometown, for 2 weeks. And they're with us remotely, kind of like you and I are right now. And they're handing assignments in that way and keeping track. And then they come back, you know, after that 2 weeks, and they're back with us again. The solution obviously won't solve all the problems, like what if you wanted to be on the track team or something. And I imagine you have to be flexible. You just have to say, well, during track season, you're going to have to board with us through the whole track season, right, to be eligible for that. But that's what we're doing. So we're trying to – it's always about space and time. We're trying to bridge that gap for the more rural people who are interested in what we have to offer here.
That's awesome. I love that you guys are helping them out as you give them different options. Now, segueing into the challenges to like what's going good, I know you guys have had some really cool wins. What are some wins you guys have had recently?
Yeah, we were encouraged to apply for a VELA grant, V-E-L-A. You might look them up. They like to give money for innovations in education and private education. And sure enough, we got a nice award that helped us get a lot of equipment for, you know, connecting people over the internet and things, which some of the stuff we're still setting up. We're just unboxing all the great stuff we got for the new season, which is allowing us to upgrade every classroom to have internet capability, big monitors on the walls, and all of the equipment that you need to run all that stuff. To make it easy for an instructor just to switch on like we are here in the middle of a class and involve other people. So that was great. I'm counting down like grants. I know that's not the only way we measure success, but we're also thankful. The Kansas District spends a lot of attention on us. The Kansas District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, our synod, they spend a lot of attention on us because we're the only Lutheran high school in Kansas, which was a surprise to me. We opened our doors. They came down and told me so. What? And then I felt a little nervous. I said, oh no, everybody's watching. So, but they gave us a grant to help us develop like picnic grounds and light athletic stuff in some of the vacant lots that are around us here. And we're in a cooperation with the local business, BG Products. I'll give them a shout out. They do like fuel additives and lubrication stuff, worldwide company. They're headquartered very near us. They're our neighbor. And they let us do things on all this property they have right in the middle of town. That's pretty miraculous. And so with district support, with their support, this happens. We just got a new chaplain for the school. So because we're a recognized service organization, the synod, we can issue a call like an ordination. So we called Pastor Mike Brockman, who was retiring from the pulpit, but really expressed a desire to work here with the kids and with the faculty. And so he signed on. He'll be teaching our theology classes this year. And it'll be great to have a chaplain and a counselor for the kids and all of that. He's a great guy. We've got a new old colleague of mine who's on board. He has just come back from Chicago, where he's been working on his PhD in Latin and Greek. And he'll be further strengthening our program in those two really important studies for the students. And this year we'll have sort of an immersion experience in Spanish too. You might get the impression we do a lot of languages here, and we do. So that's going on. We're putting finishing touches. Also, district helped us with this in finishing up our art studio. So we have a pretty high-tech art studio with lighting and shadow boxes to do life drawing and all of that stuff. There's just so much good stuff going on that, and we've got a lot of returning students and new students. So this is wonderful.
Man, a ton of wins. And I love all the grants. I think brag about the grants all you want, because I mean, there's not a lot of schools that can always get those. And it's a lot of work and time to put in to get those too, right?
Yes. I'm so happy that I have such a backup with Amanda Carter. She's my administrative assistant here. And here's some advice on that. I mean, I had a background in project management and software design when I was a video game guy and all stuff. And we use a thing that's kind of like Microsoft Project. We use one called Aeon Timeline. And you can put a file out there and you can graph all your ongoing projects and grants and when you have to have them in, what you need to do. And it's in a project timeline that relates everything you're doing. And so she and I, we tag up on this, and you can see all the plates you've got spinning at a glance. And it will remind you, oh, it's time to do this, or it's time to do that. And I think that has kept us really working on the same important puzzles at the same time. And that, so yeah, we have another couple grant projects we're working on. We're just so happy that we've had success in those. And we find a lot of people are interested in what we're doing.
I love it. Love it. And now anything else to share on the wins thing before I ask you my final question?
Anything else on the wins? Well, so far, here you go, Mitch. Our work with you has been great. We love our new website, and we like the integration that we're getting. We installed ClassReach for our school this year. I'll give them a shout out too. They were surprisingly affordable. We didn't think we could get into a management system like that. I'd had some experience with other brands, and the cost for the school, for a small school particularly, is just prohibitive. But because of them and their cost structure, we're able to bring some capabilities that you don't expect in a bigger school. And your work with Zenrollment and our web redesign and all this stuff is integrating all of that, which makes us even that much more effective when you're talking about just keeping track of projects, all the spinning plates. We're really tickled about that. And our parents are too. Both the prospective people who check us out, but also our continuing parents, because they have even more windows into the school, which if you're in this business, I just want to tell you, and you're a Christian doing education, the job of educating a child, everywhere in scripture, it's the parents' job. There's no schools mentioned in there. We help parents. Those are our primary, those are the people we serve. So we consider our authority to be derived from theirs. So they are totally a part of what we do. As a matter of fact, they're invited to walk into the classroom just with a little bit of preparation or foreknowledge on that and hang out as much as they want. They can be in the classes with their kids. This idea of keeping parents out of schools is perverse. It's bad.
Man, I love that. And I love that you've mentioned that's how it was from the beginning. Cause like my wife and I want to homeschool ours when he's older. I mean, because we're technically homeschooling since the day he was born, technically, you know.
That's so right.
I was homeschooled my whole life, so I do have I love homeschooling and what it was for me and everything. Now I know not all homeschooling is the same, but it was awesome for me. So that's awesome.
That's
I love it. Well, as I lead into the final question, Dan the man, so what would be that piece of advice you would give for other school leaders that are listening?
Oh my. Well, if you're thinking of starting a school, right, I'm going to say, don't do what I'm doing. We're doing what we're doing for a very particular reason, and that is we're starting a high school. The best way to build a good, strong school community is to start, say, with your preschoolers and kindergartners and just add a grade as all the families involved as they get older and just keep adding a grade every year. The best way is sort of like from the seed up, you know. By that analogy, we're kind of an odd potted plant, and we've been translated into a system that already had these grade schools. So one of the struggles is convincing people within our existing system that we are a good destination for their kids. And as people age and new kids come up, they will be raised with that expectation. But my advice in planting schools, do it from the bottom up, if you can at all. Starting with a high school, unless you have some other supporting structures, is very difficult. It's kind of like lifting yourself up by your own bootstraps, just dangling in air. The ground of education is the very young up.
I think that's great advice, and I would concur. And also the schools we've talked with, especially the startup ones, they're taking that approach of the 1 year, adding 1 year. And that just makes sense, like obviously in my head, the safe route. But then I talked to one school recently, and they were doing – what did they do? They skipped one. They had like first through fifth, and then they had a seventh grade. And I was like, and they go, well, it's because we had a couple kids that were in seventh grade that wanted to go. And I was like, all right, I guess more power to you. So, but that's super good advice. And I would 100% agree with you. So, well, Dan, I loved our time together. I love what you're doing. I love working with you and Amanda and the team. So I'm wishing you guys nothing but the best as you continue to educate that next generation there in Kansas and you enter year two. And I just want to say thank you because your background's awesome. And I know that you are doing some awesome things there in Kansas. And I hope to one day visit Kansas for the first time. And I can come by and see the school and see you guys in action. So that'd be awesome.
We'll provide hospitality.
Perfect. I'll talk to the wife. She's the boss. So got to make sure. Perfect.
Bring your kids too. Come see us.
I'll bring him as well. All right, Dan. Well, hey, keep doing what you're doing, man. I love what you guys are doing. And I know we'll chat again soon. But thanks, man.
Thank you, Mitch.
I love that guy. Another huge shout out and a thank you to Dan for taking time and being on the podcast today. Love what he is doing at Concordia. Love what he's doing in Kansas and just wishing him nothing but the best as they continue to grow that school and educate that next generation that is coming behind us. So Dan, keep it up, my friend. And if you're a school listening to this and you're also looking to grow and need help at your school, please get connected with us over at schoolsuccessmakers.com. That's schoolsuccessmakers.com. We have some great partnerships with companies that are there to help you either grow your enrollment, do fundraising, strategic planning, maybe a new SIS for your school. We have some great relationship with them. We'd love to connect you with them. And if you're looking to grow, specifically SlaterStrategies.com, go check them out. They're there specifically to help grow your school's enrollment. So make sure you go check out their website and some of the free resources they have on their website. But if you're looking for some community as a school leader, please join our private Facebook community called School Success Makers. I'm personally in there. Would love to see you in there as well. School Success Makers private community on Facebook. And then this fall, I've been hyping it up for a while. We're almost there. We're launching the School Success Report, a weekly newsletter for you amazing school leaders that you are not going to want to miss out from getting in your inbox every week. So make sure you go sign up on schoolsuccessmakers.com for our free newsletter called the School Success Report. We've been working hard prepping and preparing for it. It's going to have news articles, shout outs to different teachers in the country. It's going to have amazing resources as well as giveaways and some gifts. You're just going to have to wait and see. So just go check it out. Make sure you're subscribed. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, ideas for us, also let us know those on our website as well. All right. I think it's enough talking for now. Hope you guys tune in next week for another amazing episode as usual on the School Success Podcast. We'll see you then.